Chapter 6, Reuben. When he arrived in his classroom on Monday morning, Trevor was already seated. He'd taken a place in the front row like usual. They looked at each other briefly, Reuben sensing something unsaid on the boy's part. "What's on your mind this morning, Trevor?"
"Mr. St. Clair, are you married?"
"No, I'm not."
"Do you ever wish you were?"
Reuben remembered Trevor's mother standing in his classroom, remembered something she'd said when he'd called her son very honest and direct.
"Yeah, he's all of that, all right, only you say it like it's a good thing."
In fact, Reuben remembered Trevor's mother often, at odd moments, with no seeming connection she would return in memory. How, like a little storm cloud, she'd blown into his classroom one morning.
"That's a hard question to answer, Trevor. I mean, there's marriage, and then there's marriage."
"Huh?"
"There are good ones and bad ones."
"Do you sometimes wish you had a good one?"
"Okay, I give up. What's this all about?"
"Nothing. I just wondered." Mary Ann Tellman wandered in, not surprising that she would be the next to arrive. She was the only other student Reuben knew for sure had accepted his extra credit assignment, because she'd stayed after class one day and described it at great length, a recycling project. She was a cute, popular girl, the potential cheerleader type, about which Reuben tried to hold an open mind. But her approach to his class and assignment seemed insincere and staged, reminding him that Trevor's project remained secret. And a good secret it might prove to be, paying forward. He should have asked about that before the rest of the class began to arrive, but Trevor's strange questions had thrown him off his game. After class, Trevor filed out last, and Reuben raised a hand to flag him down, opened his mouth to call Trevor's name. But once again, Trevor proved quicker on the draw.
"I want to talk to you again," Trevor said, turning and stopping in front of Reuben's desk.
He jammed his hands deep into his pockets and waited until the last of the other students had gone. Little sweeps of his eyes and a slight rocking on his heels revealed something, but Reuben wasn't sure he could properly decode it. A little nervousness, maybe. Finally, convinced that they were alone, Trevor said,
"My mom wants to know if you'll come to dinner tomorrow night."
"She said that?"
"Yeah, she said that."
And that little place in Reuben, the one he could never properly train, jumped up to meet her kindness, despite his caution. Maybe she didn't dislike him as much as he thought, but even Reuben's heart could sense when something didn't fit.
"Why does she want me to come to dinner?"
"I don't know. Why not?"
"She doesn't like me very much."
"You met my mom?"
"I met her temper, yes."
"Well, maybe she wants to talk about Jerry, my friend Jerry. He's part of my project, but she doesn't like him at all. I think she wants you to help her, you know, sort of work it out about that." This invitation was becoming grounded now in Reuben's mind in something that made sense and fit with everything else he knew so far.
"Couldn't we have a little private parent-teacher conference here at school?"
"Oh, here at school. Well, I asked her, but she said, you know, she works so hard and all. Two jobs. She just said it would be nice if you could come over."
"I guess that would be okay. What time?"
I'll have to ask her. I'll let you know tomorrow." The following morning, early, just before his first class, it happened again, lightning striking twice in the same place. She was angry again, and Reuben wondered if she had ever settled down in between. He didn't even have to open his mouth this time, because her anger was all complete, needing only to be delivered. Reuben admired that in her, envied it, actually. Maybe even felt tempted to ask for lessons.
"Why did you tell my boy we had to meet at my house?"
"I didn't. I didn't say we had to meet at all."
"You didn't?"
She stopped in mid-charge, obviously thrown, all fired up with no target.
"Trevor told me that to make chicken fajitas because you were coming for dinner, because you wanted to talk to me about his project."
"Really? Interesting. He told me that you invited me
over for dinner, and he thought it was because you wanted to talk to me about his project.
Well, what the heck's he doing then? She said it as if to herself, as if Reuben were not in the room at all.
Maybe he wants to talk to both of us about the project. But why not here at school?
He said you work two jobs, and it would be easier if I came to the house.
I'm here, aren't I?
I'm only telling you what he said.
Oh, okay. Why is he trying to get you over, then?
It would be a risk to say, but Reuben guessed that he probably would anyway. It would get her going again, most likely, which was okay, because he didn't mind her anger. It was clean and open, and you could always see it coming.
Yesterday morning, he asked me if I was married, and then he asked me if I'd like to be.
So?
I just thought...
What?
I just thought he might be trying to fix us up.
Us?
She seemed to freeze in place, everything running across her face at once, waiting to be read. Another risk, another defacing for which he'd left himself open.
Us? You must be joking.
I realize we're the world's most unlikely couple, but after all, he's just a boy.
He watched her stumble back up through herself, clumsily, to a place that could speak again.
Trevor would never do such a thing. He knows his daddy is gonna come home.
Just guessing.
Why would you even say you would come to dinner?
I felt guilty after you left last time. You were asking me to help straighten out some problems that might have been caused by my assignment. I'm afraid I was a little dismissive.
A beam of morning sun slanting through the window caught Arlene and made her brighter than anything else in the room.
I know you don't like me.
It was the last thing Reuben expected her to say, especially as he admired her. He felt transparent at almost all times, yet his intentions never seemed to be correctly read by those around him.
What makes you think that?
She made that noise again, that rude little snort.
You just said we're the most unlikely couple in the world.
What does that mean if you're not looking down on me?
It means I assumed you were looking down on me. It means I knew you were thinking it, so I had to say it.
But Reuben couldn't bring himself to give those answers, so she went on.
You think I'm too stupid to see the way you look down on me? Well, I may not have your education, and I may not talk good like you, but that don't mean I'm stupid.
I never said you were stupid.
You didn't have to.
I never thought it, either. It never occurred to me to wonder how much education you have. I think you're being overly sensitive.
What the heck would you know about what I'm feeling?
When it comes to oversensitivity, I'm something of an expert. Anyway, none of this was my idea. And if you don't want me in your house, I won't come.
No, you know what? That's okay. Truth is...
Reuben knew from her pause, the strain in her face, that if she ever finished this sentence, she'd tell him something difficult. Something was hard for her to say to anyone, but particularly to him.
Truth is, I'm not doing so good talking to him about this. I could use the help. 6 o'clock?
From those who knew Trevor speak. I went to her house. It wasn't at all what I expected, and that made me examine my own expectations and admit that perhaps in some small way I had been guilty of looking down on her, though heaven knows I never meant to. It was a modest house, but scrupulously clean inside and out, and fussed over and tended. No plant life growing over the walkway, not a single streak on those white-trimmed window panes. Except for a wrecked truck in the driveway, every part of her home brought back an expression my mother used to use in reference to herself, house proud. I never expected her to remind me of my mother. The whole thing made me nervous. She answered the door looking distressingly nice. She was wearing this blousy cottony dress in a flower print.
as if she took dinner guests rather seriously. I stepped into her living room, holding flowers that I couldn't bring myself to give her. Frozen. Every part of me frozen. For the longest time, neither of us could seem to talk about anything. And then Trevor showed up. Thank goodness. As soon as Arlene cleared the dinner dishes from the table, Trevor ran to his room and got his calculator. He'd put off explaining his project all through dinner because, he said, it was too hard to explain without a calculator. This all started with something Daddy taught me. Arlene's ears perked up at that, and she pulled her chair around as if to watch the calculator over his shoulder. Remember that riddle he used to do? Remember that, Mom? Well, I don't know, honey. He knew a lot of riddles. Reuben's stomach felt warm and nicely full. He watched them both across the table, feeling surprisingly relaxed. The flowers he'd brought her sat in a vase on the table. Not roses. That would have been too personal. Too much. A mix of dried flowers and sunny things, daisies and the like, which he'd presented with an apology for having made a bad first impression, intended only as a friendly gesture. It had embarrassed her and made them both feel awkward. It had been a mistake, one he'd take back if he could, and every glance at them sitting in the porcelain vase reminded him that he could not. Remember that one about working for 30 days? No, Trevor, I don't think I do. Remember, he said if you were going to work for somebody for 30 days and you had a choice, you could take $100 a day, or you could take $1 the first day, and then it would be doubled every day. I'd said I'd take $100 a day, but he said I'd lose out. So I worked it out on my calculator. $100 a day for the 30 days is $3,000. But if you double that dollar every day, you'd make over $500 million on your last day. Not to mention everything between. That's how I thought of my idea for Mr. St. Clair's class. You see, I do something real good for three people, and then when they ask how they can pay it back, I say they have to pay it forward to three more people each. So nine people get helped. Then those people have to do 27. He turned on the calculator, punched in a few numbers. Then it sort of spreads out, see, to 81, then 243, then 729, then 2,187. See how big it gets? But honey, there's just one problem with that. What, Mom? I'm sure Mr. St. Clair will explain it to you. Reuben jumped at the mention of his name. I will? Yes, tell him what's wrong with the plan. I think your mother is upset because, well, it's about the homeless man. She's worried about that situation. No, not that. Trevor, I know I gave you a hard time about Jerry, but then I had a long talk with him, and I might have been wrong about him. He's a pretty nice guy. Besides, I think he got a place to live. He hasn't been around for a few days. Trevor's forehead furrowed down, and he clicked off the calculator. I went by his work. They said he never came back after they paid him. Honey, I'm sorry. See, that is the very part Mr. St. Clair is about to explain. Reuben took his napkin off his lap and threw it on the table. This pattern between Arlene and her son, it had come deadly clear. Here's Mr. St. Clair's son, to tell you all the things you don't want to hear. I'm sorry, Miss McKinney. If you want your son to believe that people are basically selfish and irresponsible, you'll have to tell him yourself. He smiled tightly and shook his head, saying nothing. She fixed him with a look that burned in silence. Well, Trevor, she said, I think it's a good project. Tell us more about it. So Trevor explained, with the help of his calculator, how big this thing could become. Somewhere around the 16th level, at which point he'd involved 43,500,000 46,721 people. The calculator proved smaller than Trevor's optimism, but he was convinced that in just a few more levels, the numbers would be larger than the population of the world. Then you know what happens? Then everybody gets helped more than once, and it gets bigger, even faster. What do you think, Mr. St. Clair? Arlene clearly wanted something from him, but he wasn't sure from minute to minute what that something might be. I think it's a noble idea, Trevor. A big effort. Big efforts lead to good grades. How do you feel about the fact that Jerry is gone? Trevor sighed. From the look on Arlene's face, Reuben had done his job correctly for a change. It's okay, I guess. Except I just have to start all over, is all. It's okay, though. I already got other ideas. Like what, honey? Arlene said in that sugary voice she slipped into when questioning her own son. It's a secret. Can I be excused? Arlene caught Reuben's eye again, begging for something, as if she could not just say, "No, young man, we are not done here." Reuben only shrugged. Okay, run along then, honey. Trevor charged in the direction of his bedroom, but as he barreled by Reuben's seat, Reuben took him gently by the sleeve and pulled him over close enough that Arlene, on the other side of the table, hopefully would not hear. You can't orchestrate love, Trevor. What's orchestrate? You can't make it happen for somebody else. Doesn't that have something to do with music? Not always. Oh, you can't, huh? I mean, huh? Oh, okay. That wasn't my idea, though. Anyway, just checking. Reuben loosed his sleeve and Trevor disappeared. Reuben looked up to see Arlene glaring across the table with that mixture of stress and anger and rocket fuel to which he was becoming nicely accustomed. What'd you say to him? It's a secret. May I be excused? From the Diary of Trevor. Mom and Mr. St. Clair like each other. I just know it. What I can't figure out is, why don't they know it? It's right there. And I just feel like shaking them and saying, oh, just admit it. Mr. St. Clair would be nice to her, I think. I think he'd give his entire heart to somebody who would say, you know, that's a nice half of a face you got there. You know, like the glass is half full instead of, well, you know. He said about his face. I think if he wasn't, he could admit it better when he likes somebody. But then my mom has a great face, and she's doing it great. And she's doing it too. Go figure. What if the world really changed because of my project? Wouldn't that be the coolest thing? Then everybody would say, who cares about his face? He's the best teacher in the world. That's what matters. That would be so cool. I think the best shot I got now for my project is Mrs. Greenberg. Jerry's gone. And Mr. St. Clair says you can't orchestrate love, which made it sound like I was trying to wave a baton around or something. But so far, it looks like he's right. But a garden holds still for all that orchestra stuff.